The Big Story is brought to you by Scotia iTrade. There's a trader in all of us. There is no shortage of endangered species in this world right now.
Over the last 40 years, the loss of vertebrate species around the world, animals, mammals, fish, birds, reptiles, they've dropped 60% on average around the world. The report lays the blame on humans.
And there's no shortage of plans to help the animals that are most at risk. A lot of them involve changing our behavior, banning hunting, protecting acres of wild habitat, and any number of proposals that take aim at the damage we do to animals. You might remember this one.
Vancouver City Council will vote on banning plastic straws.
Plastic straws are not recyclable, and Canadians throw away 57 million of them every day. And it turns out a lot of those end up right here in the ocean.
But what about stepping in more directly? And by directly, I mean hands-on efforts to save one of the lesser-known but most endangered species in Canada, a particular breed of Atlantic salmon. But why this fish? What kind of effort does it take to protect a species that might be genetically unique but looks exactly the same as any number of salmon found in the Bay of Fundy? What does it cost to run a 5-year government program that has a mortality rate over 90%? And why is it worth it? I'm Jordan Heath Rawlings, and this is The Big Story.
We've had like these historic rivers in New Brunswick that flowed with them for years and years and years. It's now they're threatened.
Lindsay Jones is a freelance writer for Maclean's and for the Globe and Mail and other publications. And she got her hands dirty, but she got them wet. Lindsay, tell me about the fish that you released and where it came from.
I was in Fundy National Park, and the morning started out bright and early on the ocean, and there were 18-wheelers with coolers on the back of them, and these fish had been trucked in from 230 kilometers away on an island called Grand Manan in the Bay of Fundy in New Brunswick, the only saltwater holding pens for wild salmon in the world are there on Grand Manan Island. And so the fish were brought in from there in these giant coolers on the back of 18-wheelers. And so first thing in the morning, we're standing there. These men, they're aquaculture workers, like fishermen, but in aquaculture, have these giant nets, and they're reaching into the coolers and pulling out these 15, 20-pound salmon. They can barely hold the net. It's just like the end is bending. And they're scooping them up and then putting them into another cooler. And then those salmon were taken on a forklift over to a helicopter. And the helicopter would land. They'd hook up this other giant cooler. And then these fish would be helicoptered into the interior of Fundy National Park.
Wow.
And released in a couple different rivers. So a few of them were just taken on the back of a truck, and I went in the back of a truck, and we, went through the park to the Upper Salmon River, this beautiful river, and the helicopter lowered the giant cooler down to the riverbed, and a team of scientists went out and released the salmon from this giant cooler into the river. And I mean, they're just like flying out of there. These fish are ready to mate, and they're huge. They're adults. And it was quite a sight. And there's a few in the bottom that were just, they had to be pushed along a little bit. Maybe those ones are not do as well. But so after that, there were some salmon that were released by hand. And so Kurt Samways, the aquatic ecologist from University of New Brunswick, he was the first to release one. And it's a bit of a novelty to release it by hand, because most of them were going in by, just a cooler tipping in the river. So he released one, and then there was a school group there, and there were some other interested parties, and so the public had the opportunity to volunteer or if they wanted to release one. And so I think maybe about 10 of them got released that way, and I got to do one.
Did it take off?
So mine needed a little bit, like he was a little bit stunned. That was my main impression. I just thought this guy would shoot right out of the this rubber hammock that we lowered into the river that he was in. I thought he'd shoot out. But yeah, he was a little bit stunned. He was stressed from his journey and he needed a little pat on the bum to get going.
That was an amazing story. Why are these salmon being trucked and then helicoptered 230 kilometers all the way to this river?
So these are endangered salmon. There's only 200 left. And
what kind of salmon are they?
They're classified as Atlantic salmon, but they're genetically distinct. They're called Inner Bay of Fundy Atlantic salmon. What makes them different is that their migration area is more limited than regular Atlantic salmon, which travel as far as Greenland. These salmon just stay in the Bay of Fundy or the Gulf of Maine, and that's where they hang out. That's the extent of their ocean travels. They also, unlike other Atlantic salmon, have high survival rates after spawning. So they spawn, and then most salmon die after spawnings. But these salmon are more resilient and, you know, will continue to go to the ocean and then back to the freshwater streams for many times over. So they released 900 salmon last year and 70 made it back.
Wow.
Part of them, normally it would be more than that, but they're dying at sea. This journey from a penned-in aquaculture-like setting, but they're wild salmon, so they're in these ocean pens, keeps them safe from whatever's killing them in the ocean. They don't know specifically what is killing them, but the leading marine threats include interactions with farmed salmon. So there's more than 100 aquaculture sites in the Bay of Fundy. Also predators, environmental shifts. So the Bay of Fundy is warming greater than any other part of the ocean, and also fishing. So those four things are the leading marine threats that are affecting their survival rates at sea. So they go to sea for a year and then they come back into the rivers in October and November to spawn. And so a lot of them aren't ever making it back to spawn because they're 99% of them are being killed off at sea. So this is a way to short circuit their lifespan and protect them by putting them in these ocean pens off the coast in the Bay of Fundy.
How much does that cost?
The program, it's a five-year program. It's in its fourth year. And the federal government has given $2.9 million over that 5 years. And it works out to, like this year, for instance, 600 salmon were released. It works out to $837 per salmon.
How many of those salmon make it?
Well, the year before, 900 salmon were released, 70 made it. In 2016, only 13 returned.
Wow. That is not a high survival rate.
It's not a high survival rate. It may be hard to look at this program and to think that it's making a difference, but the people that are for it, that want to see the Inner Bay of Fundy Atlantic salmon survive, say, well, if it wasn't for human intervention, this species would not even exist today.
Up next.
There was something about it. It felt incredibly special to release that fish back into its habitat where it knew exactly what it should be doing, and based on 10,000 years of genetic evolution.
We all have investment goals, and Scotia iTrade can help you reach yours. Access free tools and resources to sharpen your investment skills. Visit ScotiaiTrade.com to start direct investing today. Scotia iTrade, there's a trader in all of us. Aside from the obvious feel-good story of saving a species that's endangered, why should we be protecting these salmon? What's the government want to do here?
Kurt Samways, the aquatic ecologist from the University of New Brunswick, says that this program also benefits the river in less visible ways, and he compares it to adding natural fertilizer to the river systems in the park. When the salmon die, when the salmon poop, when they lay their eggs that perhaps don't survive, this leads to the growth of more algae on the rocks, which feeds the invertebrates. And when there are more invertebrates, there's more food for the juvenile salmon. And so that it's the river's healthier, the salmon are healthier. It's brought back to its original state with all the little microorganisms in there that it historically had.
What kind of connection is there between people out there in Atlantic Canada and this fish?
Well, that's a great question. So I'm an Atlantic Canadian.
Yeah. And,
so Atlantic salmon is a real iconic species here, and it's something that most people that live here have a story or can relate to it, whether it's going salmon fishing with a relative when you're growing up, or camping, or just being on the waterways that are healthy and that where the Atlantic salmon has flourished for many centuries. It's also historically been part of our food supply. It is a very important fish for Indigenous communities in Atlantic Canada. In fact, there are some partnerships going on with this program with Indigenous groups in New Brunswick. And before the salmon were released, there was a short drumming ceremony on the waterfront before the fish were helicoptered out.
What is your story about Atlantic salmon?
So Atlantic salmon in the wild has become such a rare thing in these parts, in these rivers that we've had, like these historic rivers in New Brunswick that flowed with them for years and years and years. It's now they're threatened, and not just the Inner Bay of Fundy Atlantic salmon. And I guess to hold one in my hands, that is, I mean, it was helped along, but the fact is it's still wild. Its genetics are wild and it behaves like a wild salmon. And to hold that in my hands and feel the energy in it and the strength of that fish, there was something about it. It felt incredibly special to release that fish back into its habitat where it knew exactly what it should be doing. And based on, you know, 10,000 years of genetic evolution. So what's interesting about salmon is that they have this sense where they pick up on the same river. They know which rivers that their ancestors were born into and where they started out as babies. It's just such an interesting aspect of their evolution in their lives, that, and then to release it and it just see it, you know, turn around and swim upstream. It knew exactly what to do. It felt really special.
So it's a 5-year commitment for the government. Is there a goal in mind, like a place where it will kind of reach a tipping point and enough salmon will start making it back naturally to discontinue this program? Is there a point at which they'll just cut it off? I mean, what does success look like?
Well, that would be the goal, that the fish would be self-sustaining and there wouldn't have to be this human intervention. I don't think, by the looks of how it's going, that it is going to be able to survive on its own after one more year. That is not what's happening. So the program will likely continue because the federal government, it's obliged under the Endangered Species Act to do everything it can to try and protect species that are endangered. So I would expect this program will continue in some form. It might be a different program than this. Maybe they'll up the numbers. Maybe they'll release more than 600 this year. Maybe they'll release 1,000 fish next year. Maybe that'll make a difference.
Yeah, it seems like they need to achieve some kind of critical mass in order to, because 70 fish a year is not going to cut it.
Exactly.
Thanks so much for your time, Lindsay.
Thank you.
Lindsay Jones, freelancer for Maclean's. That was The Big Story, brought to you by Scotia iTrade. You can visit scotiaitrade.com to start direct investing today. And for more from us, we're at thebigstorypodcast.ca. Lots of episodes, a way to contact us, just like you can on social media at Big Story Podcast, on Twitter, on Facebook, on Instagram. And we are everywhere you get podcasts. So look us up, tell us what you think, hit that rate button, hit that review button, type something nice. I'm Jordan Heath-Rawlings. Thank you for listening. We'll talk tomorrow.